The Lakers streak comes to an end. The hands of the Detroit Pistons. We'll talk about it. What does this mean for the Lakers moving forward? What happened in the game last night? And what does this mean coming up for the road ahead? I'm Trevor Lane. This is the Lakers Collective. Jovan Buha, Jason Tempf. Guys, you know, we had a run there. Then we had a run where every show we were doing, it was after a Lakers win. Now we're back to do one after a Lakers loss. I don't know. I still don't feel that bad, though.
What's up, guys? It's good to see you. I felt the same way. Like, I gave the Lakers a complete pass for that game, which is funny because there was so much to get annoyed about between, like, I thought Luka was pretty bad last night. But at the same time, you don't go on the winning streak without Luka Doncic. And they played 5 road games in 8 days, all against big physical ass-kicking teams that specifically target a weakness of the Lakers, which is their athleticism and overall physicality. And so, like, you factor all that in, Marcus and Rui being out. This game in particular against Detroit was the one I had marked too as, like, this is probably the toughest game because Detroit's best player isn't Cade, it's their defense. That's what Detroit does. They just physically maul you on the offensive glass and they maul you defensively. And, like, it would have been so easy and completely acceptable for them to just let go of the rope there in that early third quarter when Duncan hit those 2 threes that put him up 16. But they battled all the way back. And, like, Tobias Harris makes a tough left shoulder fade. Danis Jenkins makes a tough left shoulder fade. Luke Kennard misses a wide open three by, like, this much. Luka gets a pretty good look at a mid-ranger that he misses. Like, they still could have won that in spite of everything. So overall, I'm, like, giving the Lakers a complete and total pass for what happened last night.
Yeah, I don't want to overreact to last night's loss. I mean, this group has been sort of running on fumes the past few games. If you look at it, they've had several rock fights here. First Houston game, the Orlando game, and then again last night where they just didn't quite have it, but they were able to defend at a certain level. Their opponent also didn't quite have it from a shooting perspective, an offensive perspective. And they gutted out the Miami game. They gutted out the Orlando game, and they nearly gutted it out last night. So you're not going to win every single rock fight and every single clutch game you're in. You're going to drop those. And I think there's been a lot more to be positive about. And to Jason's point, like, the resiliency that they showed in that second half to have that second quarter just go completely off the rails. You get outscored 42-25. Yeah. I mean, that was the difference in the game. They won 2 of the other 3 quarters. And then the one quarter they lost by 1 point. Like, they lost this game in the second quarter. They just got blitzed, ran off the floor. And that created this hole that they were never able. I mean, they did technically climb out of it, like, late with, like, a minute left that they regained the lead. But at that point, it took them so much energy to get out of that hole that they didn't have the legs to close this one out. As Jason mentioned, Luka didn't have the most efficient night. And I mean, the big three in the first half, again, not the most, like, you know, I think LeBron was 0-for-5. Austin was 2-for-8. Luka was 5-for-15. So to have those guys go, 7-for-28 in the first half, and you're still only down 13, that was like about as bad as it could have gone, and you still were in it. Then you have the big third quarter, you bounce back, and then it's a close game. You just don't execute. So people are going to overreact, and the sky's falling, and the Lakers aren't contenders, and they're going to lose in round one, and Luka and all this stuff. I'm not there. They're 12-2 in their past 14. They have a top 5 offense, been a top 10 defense. Like, I think things are going to be okay.
Oh, I've seen the take out there that, see, the first real team the Lakers have played, then they lose. Like, that kind of bullshit is out there again of oh, no, the Lakers can't beat good teams. I'm like, my God, they just ran off an incredible run against good teams. They've been beating teams. Yes, last night's game, I give them credit for getting themselves back in position to potentially win the game. We talked about it on the live play-by-play I did on Lakers Nation. Like, now your goal is to get the game within 5 points within the final 5 minutes and give yourself a chance to win. And they did that. They just started trading buckets with Detroit. The Lakers offense broke first. They missed first. Detroit kept scoring. Danis Jenkins, give the man credit. He had a phenomenal game. I love Danis Jenkins. He is awesome. And he wound up having a career night from the field. He was hitting everything, hit some really tough shots, and Detroit ultimately gets the win. In that situation, you tip your cap. I thought Detroit played very, very hard. The Lakers, they responded, and did everything they could to get the win there. Just didn't go their way this time. But this is still a very positive run that the Lakers have been on. And I don't think one loss suddenly undoes everything that happened. I know fandom gets caught in the, you know, did they win? Did they lose? If they won, the sun is shining and birds are chirping and all that. And if they lose, the sky is falling. But that's just, I didn't feel that bad about this game. I thought the Lakers really competed in this one. Luka didn't shoot the ball particularly well. Like you mentioned it, that at halftime, LeBron, Austin, Luka, none of them were shooting well. Austin dug himself out of that. LeBron dug himself out, finished 4-for-10. LeBron did. Luka never did. Jason, is fatigue starting to add up here for Luka? And if so, could the soft stretch coming up really help him with three games in a row now against tanking teams?
Yeah, you know, like it was very clear that he was gassed. Like even compared to Luka and Austin, his energy level was just in the tank. They go into that third quarter run and Austin and LeBron are just laser focused trying to come all the way back. And Luka's still just kind of chucking up shots and grifting. And he made like three or four really bad defensive mistakes during that third quarter run, and they still came back kind of in spite of him. And I'm not getting critical on Luka at all for that, because again, they went on a 9-game winning streak in large part because he ascended to a level that no one else in this league really is capable of reaching. And so to me, like when you really dig into it, the NBA regular season will do this to you sometimes, where you're like getting on airplanes every other day and you're constantly reacclimating yourself to a new area, a new gym, a new opponent. And like, again, like you got to think too for Detroit guys, like not only are they younger and more athletic, they were in a homestand off of 2 full days of rest. Like it was such a disgusting rest advantage for Detroit in that game that like, I'm not even the least bit surprised. And frankly, like Luka doesn't have like the natural apex athletic traits that some of the other guys, even like LeBron at age 41 has. So like he's more susceptible to that kind of stuff. And like, honestly, when you really look at the way the playoffs work, especially in the first round, you get like extra days off. You never are traveling every other day. It's more like you are at home for a four or five day period, and then you travel, but then you're in, let's say, Houston for a 4 or 5 day period. Like the closest thing that resembles an actual playoff schedule was that back-to-back baseball series they played in Houston. In those two games, Luka looked amazing. And by the way, they were playing every other day before that. So like the way that I look at it, like this isn't like when Luka was, because some of the stuff that Luka was doing early in the year, jacking up bad shots, not getting back on defense, missing rotations, that kind of stuff. There was valid criticism there because it was during phases of the season where the schedule was lighter and where they really needed more out of him. This to me was like straight up 5 games in 8 nights, all on the road, all against big, physical, awesome teams. And he's the guy that's facing the opponent's best defender and biggest, most physical guy every single night. And he ends up in Detroit against one of the top 2 or 3 perimeter defenders in the league. And he kind of just mailed one in. And even then, he was this close to coming out of there with the win. So, like, I'm cutting Luka slack. Like, you could really get nitpicky on a lot of stuff. Like, Jackson, frustrating, dropping a wide-open dunk on a handoff from LeBron underneath the basket. Jackson has another 4-on-3 read where he rifles the ball out of bounds instead of throwing the ball to Jake LaRavia. LeBron had a really lazy skip pass in the fourth quarter where he turned it over on the skip. Austin had, like, the one at half court, I don't blame him for, because Asar Thompson just jammed his knee up into him and shoved him into half court. Then Kevin Huerter comes up and punches him in the damn face. Somehow it doesn't get called.
That was crazy.
That one I'm not judging Austin for. But he had an ugly one where he like dribbled into a trap with Kevin Huerter that anybody watching could see coming a mile away. Like the Lakers made a million mistakes in that game. But like I just sat there and I was like, in spite of that, they still battled back. This isn't the time to be critical of him, even when it pertains to like, because I saw my friend Law Murray. By the way, Law's my buddy. Him and I have played basketball together before. He's a good guy. But he tweets out last night, he's like, oh, the Lakers are 1-7 against the 40 before 20 teams. And I'm like, I'm not even here trying to say the Lakers are on the same level as OKC or San Antonio, because that's not what I'm trying to say. But like last night was so not the night to be like, oh, they can't beat these guys. It's like if they play that team on 2 days rest without Cade, they beat them. They beat them handily, probably by 10 or 15 points. That was a schedule loss in the purest definition. And for Luka, like, again, to your point, Trevor, I think whether it's tonight or it's the Brooklyn game, he's going to get a night off somewhere in here somewhere. And tonight I'd play. I'm nervous about the Indiana team. They just rolled up in Orlando and won, and we're going to talk about that later in the show. They've got their three core guys playing right now, so they're a little feisty. But, like, Luka's going to get his rest. He's going to get his legs back underneath him. He has shown me in this run everything I need to see to know that this team has a shot to upset anybody.
Yeah, I think that they've got, especially with Luka playing the way that he has been, he didn't have the best game, but I think they've got a shot against just about anybody once they get going. And it wasn't even like, you know, use the phrase mail it in for Luka in this one. And there were a number of possessions over the course of the game, but he also had one of the great hustle plays. It was a James Worthy style head first dive along the sideline there, where I thought, oh, well, all right, here we've got a locked in Luka. Now, he may have hurt himself a little bit on that, but still, he's trying. You know what I mean? He's out there. He's not consciously thinking, hey, I'm going to coast a little bit in this one. I think he is a little bit exhausted. I thought the shooting percentage. Look, if Luka has an average shooting night, they coast in this game. They've got a relatively easy win in this one. I think he is still locked in and focused, and evidenced by that play, hurling himself to the floor, diving to try to keep it in play and all of that. He just had an off night, and that's going to happen now and then, especially when you've got such a difficult, physically demanding stretch like this. Jovan, where are you at on Luka coming out of this? And I also want to throw this at you, because I've got a lot of people say, well, but the Pistons didn't have Cade, so that makes this a bad loss. I didn't think that either. Where do you stand on those two things?
8-2 in their last 10 games without Cade. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. They're good.
Yeah, they've been playing well without Cade. I think they're 4-0 now over this stretch since he went out. So, I mean, sure, on paper, it's not a good loss. Like, you should be able to beat the Pistons without Cade. But when you factor in fifth game in 8 nights, fifth game on a 6-game road trip, if you look at just the Lakers' extended schedule, they play 17 games in March, where like 3/4, almost 80% of the way there, they've been playing every other day. And I think we've all felt it from covering the team, and it's every other day. There's no 2-day break. There's no 3-day break. Like, at this point, they are playing literally every other day. And there's a cumulative effect that I think, as I said earlier, like I think it started to show in that first Houston game. They didn't quite have their legs. It continued, like the Miami game, they win off of the brilliance of Luka dropping 60 and having just an insane night. And then the Orlando game again was a rock fight that they ended up kind of stealing at the end of that game, right? So I think there had been signs that they were trending in this direction in terms of just guys are fatigued. And I think it's across the board. It's not just Luka, it's not just Austin, it's everybody. To the point about Luka, he's had a couple rough offensive performances in a row. I think he's 23 of 59 over the last couple of games, and you would like to see that be a little bit more efficient. Like, I think he went, 12 for 30 against Orlando, 11 for 29 last night. I think if he's hitting, for me, the sweet spot with Luka, I've talked about this on my show because there are some people who are obsessed with his field goal attempts, and I think the sweet spot's typically like 22 to 24 field goal attempts. Once you're going above 24, I think you have to be in a certain groove offensively to warrant, like, 29 or 30 shots is a lot of shots, especially on a night when you're only hitting 11 or 12 of them. But this guy just led, it was the driving force of this 9-game win streak, is playing his best basketball as a Laker and maybe his best basketball since 2024. I don't want to overreact to a couple of games. Now, if this is a trend that continues and they lose the Indiana game and they got the OKC game coming up and he's inefficient and not playing the same level of basketball, then I think we have a different conversation about where the Lakers are at going into the playoffs, where Luka's at. But I'm not going to, you know, deem this like the December stretch from Luka based on like two nights where not only was he clearly fatigued, but the team itself was clearly fatigued to a large degree. I also think we have to talk about at some point, I do not agree with JJ's strategy of playing these guys as many minutes as he's been playing them. If you look at Luka's last 7 games, he's played 37 or more minutes in all 7 games. And I get that the Lakers are in win now mode. I get that every game matters going into the playoffs, but everyone is particularly the big three, like Austin's played 40 minutes in back-to-back games. I don't think he has had the legs to play 40 minutes in back-to-back games based on the schedule and based on how he's looked at times. Like, I don't think they're going to rest these guys necessarily, but they need to find a way to shave, like, get it down to like 36. I don't think they should be playing more than 36 minutes, barring like overtime against Denver. So I just think looking at, like, LeBron played 39 last night. All three of the big three played 39 or more. It's just, I get that they're trying to win these games and how important each game is, but I also think you'd be getting a different version of Luka and Austin and LeBron if their minutes were collectively a little bit lower here. So they got Indiana, they have Brooklyn, they have Washington coming up. Maybe they can find a way to get their minutes into like the low to mid 30s over those games. But I think you like, they're starting to look tired, and you don't want to be looking tired going into game one of the playoffs.
The one thing I'll say is them investing this, because I do agree with you, Jovan, more just like not to this extent, like maybe let's do 38 instead of 40. But I think the reason why they're going for it is they will most likely be able to punt a game or two towards the end or rest their guys, because they've, the advantage of doing this is they have now given themselves a cushion in the standings, which we haven't even mentioned. The biggest upside is they lost last night, and so did Houston. And Houston now is tied in the loss column with Denver and Minnesota. So essentially last night hurt the Lakers zero in the standings. So that's the one kind of upside of this kind of aggressive stretch.
And they're going to be the three seed.
Yeah, they're going to be
I mean, barring a disastrous collapse over the final 10 games, that they got a 3-game lead over all three of those teams. Like, yeah, they're going to be the three seed.
Right. They have a 3-game lead because of the tiebreaker. They have a 2-game lead in the standings, but because they have the tiebreaker over all three, it's effectively a 3-game lead. But just the only, and I tend to look at the downside first, like what could go wrong here. The only thing to keep an eye on is Denver. They don't play anybody the rest of the way. I think they have one matchup with the Spurs. That's it. And then they play the final two.
I just checked the schedules because I was projecting out. So Denver plays San Antonio twice and OKC once, but they play the last two games are OKC San Antonio. So those two teams will probably be resting. And then so that they have one matchup with San Antonio with a few games left that San Antonio could conceivably be going for. But yeah, I mean, Denver, I think looking at the schedule of those three, I think Denver is going to be the four seed. And then I think Minnesota, actually my projection, I had Minnesota and Houston tying. And I think Houston technically winning the tiebreaker because I had them winning the season series and then Minnesota being the sixth seed. But it's going to be really close there. I think Denver will be four though.
Yeah. Houston is up 1-0 on the season series with Minnesota. So, and there's two games to play, two games left between those two. Those two games will be critical between Minnesota and Houston. We'll see what that ultimately looks like. But also very, very, like if Denver upsets San Antonio in the one game, the real game they're going to play against them, not with like two games left or one game left, that's where maybe things get a little bit close for comfort there for the Lakers, depending on, of course, how they go from here. You got to stack up wins on your next three. You got to beat Indy. You got to beat Brooklyn. Got to beat Washington. And then play things out from there. But they've put themselves in a very good position here. But I want to go back to, you know, Jovan, you're talking about cutting down on the minutes of LeBron, Luka, Austin. We saw Jared Vanderbilt get back in the rotation out of necessity last night with no Marcus Smart, no Rui Hachimura. Is that the answer? Is that the solution to that problem? Is you go back to a 10-man rotation and then you start utilizing Vando again? Like, how do you go about, because I agree with you, how should JJ go about tearing down those minutes?
That's one way. I mean, starting with the Denver game, if you look at the rotation, JJ cut the rotation down to 9 starting with the Denver game. He said after the game he wanted to approach the game as a playoff game and play the 9 guys that are going to play. Last night he once again referenced 9 guys. So based on that, it seems like he wants to go with a 9-man rotation, and it seems like Jared Vanderbilt is on the outside looking in. It took 2 guys being out for Vando to get a shot, and even then they had a couple offense defense opportunities. They didn't go to Vando to close the game for I know a lot of fans were upset with that. They felt like he should have been out there for that final defensive possession where Jenkins hit the jumper over Austin. So I think Vando's out of the rotation come playoff time. I think Jake is probably going to be despite Jake starting last night, he has been more the 9th man when the team is at full strength, and he's probably on the borderline of the rotation. He might be a short like two shift player, like one shift a half come playoff time. So more like an 8.5 man rotation. But I think if you're going to go with that and you really want, like, okay, we want the continuity of let's play the lineups and the rotation that we're going to be playing come playoff time. You want that momentum going into the postseason. Okay, but I think the bench has to play a little bit more because it's not only been reducing it to 9, so you cut out an entire spot in the rotation. It's also been most nights they only have one bench guy reaching 20 plus minutes, and it's been a lot of the bench guys in between like 14 to 18 minutes. And again, that's more of a playoff style rotation, but I think you need to like give the bench a little bit more leeway there. And if it's staggering a little bit more or whatever, like, I mean, this has kind of been, we now know with JJ, like we're 2 years in almost, he is not very trusting of the bench in general. Mm-hmm. And I think he sent some signs going back to last season of like, I don't love the depth of my roster and I would love a better bench. I don't think we're going to see Game 4 against Minnesota again, but he has telegraphed like, well, I would not be surprised if we get into a second round series, let's say against San Antonio, and he's playing like 7 dudes and it's like the starters are all playing 30 plus. And then a couple bench guys are in like the 20 minute range. And like, that's the rotation. Like JJ does not trust the bench and he has a pretty short leash, especially if you're not making shots. Like for him, he trends more on the offensive side than the defensive side. And that is like a kind of bigger picture fear for me of, if you say the starters are you know, the top 5, then you add in Luke and Rui, and that's like the top 7. Maybe Jackson's like a borderline 8th guy. That's just not a lot of defense in there come playoff time, especially against a San Antonio or an OKC. So I do worry about the overall health of the defense like longer term. But yeah, I mean, I would just play the bench a little bit more and give these guys a little bit longer of a leash. But he's been going with the playoff rotation. I get it to an extent. You're building that continuity, that familiarity with this is what the rotation is going to look like Game 1, whoever we play in Round 1. But I think they're also running the stars into the ground right now in a way that I don't think is sustainable. Like Luka needs to have his minutes cut. Austin needs to have his minutes cut. It's way too high.
Let's look back at this stretch here. You know, because we're talking about they're running the stars into the ground. Jason, how important was it that they showed that they can do this, though? Because you can take your foot back off the gas pedal in terms of the minutes to the big three. But also, we hadn't seen a stretch like this from the big three. Like, that's part of why JJ ran the players into the ground here, is that he wanted to be able to put everybody out there on the floor and show that you can get to this level of play. Can he now decelerate a little bit with these guys? And what is this? What do we ultimately take away from this stretch now that we've seen what this team can do?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Jovan that it was a risk, but they did survive it. And here they are on the other side. And now they're in a stretch of their schedule where they can tone it back. Again, like, I think it was very much a calculated risk on JJ's part to try to secure the 3 seed for one and to try to get this team to flash a playoff ceiling, which they're, you know, one of the other things too is, I think it's extremely valuable that this team flashed their playoff ceiling, because now there's a level of buy-in and belief internally that just wasn't there earlier. And so I think ultimately all of that is very important. And you can even take it down to a bunch of individual players. So one, Luka Doncic flashed his best player in the world potential. That's a key takeaway from this stretch. Like, the Lakers had no shot to beat anybody above them in the standings unless Luka Doncic showed that he did. Check that box, right? Two, like, Austin's weaknesses versus athletic teams. After struggling against Amen Thompson, which again, like, we can also factor all this in. We're like, Austin struggled against Amen Thompson. Luka struggled against Asar Thompson. We're talking about two of the apex perimeter defenders in the league that are both playing for teams that are like not in that top tier of championship contenders that we consider around the league. I'm not as high on Detroit as everyone else, although I do think Detroit is very good. Austin in the Orlando game, especially in the second half, and then last night against Detroit, you could argue he was our best offensive player. Like, Austin was unbelievable in those two games. And I think that both of those are like strong demonstrations from Austin. That's like, between those ones and the Minnesota game and some of his other really big performances over the course of this post All-Star break stretch, Austin has clearly demonstrated that he is more resilient against the upper tier teams in the league than he used to be. That's a huge check the box, right? And I'd argue that on both ends of the floor. Like Austin, obviously he got fatigued at the end of that second, the Miami Heat game on the tail end of the back-to-back. Obviously, I thought he just took a bad angle on Danis Jenkins. Like, I think if you watch the play, when Danis kind of flashes to the ball at the top of the key, Austin's, like, first two steps are, like, out towards half court, which put him in a situation where then he was taking, like, a sideways angle to get back in front of Danis. So that one was, like, just kind of a mistake on his part in terms of technique. But, like, I didn't think he did a bad job recovering. He forced Danis into a really, really tough shot. Danis is just a good player. He's been playing pretty well all season and has eaten up that extra usage and has played well. LeBron, like, proof of concept. Can LeBron be evolutionary Draymond Green for this team, but also have the ability to slide in the second option when he needs to, like he did against Houston? Resounding checkmark. Like, I'd even extend that to, like, LeBron bought in terms of his leadership. Resounding checkmark. Like, is Marcus Smart clearly our fifth guy, and is he going to be good enough to round out that lineup and make them be able to compete against the best teams? Resounding check mark. DeAndre Ayton, this is the best extended stretch. I thought he was great for the most part good. Last night. Yeah. DeAndre Ayton, extended stretch of success against really good teams, like physical, ass-kicking, scrappy teams, which used to cause him lots of problems throughout the year. Resounding check mark. Like, Luke Kennard at various points has been deeply valuable to the team over the course of this run. Resounding checkmark. Jackson Hayes, obviously a brutal fourth quarter stretch, but I thought he was pretty good in the third quarter, and then I thought he was really good in the Orlando game. So, like, he has become a serviceable backup center in this league by adding muscle and becoming a more disciplined defender. So, like, there's been a lot of positive takeaways team-wide. Their overall ability to execute game plans on both ends of the floor and the ability to reach that, you know, average to above average defensive ceiling that we wanted them to flash, they flashed that. So, like, honestly, like, this stretch in a lot of ways is the proof of concept for them to pull back on when they need to down the line. So, to the point you're making, Trevor, let's say they chill the next few games, because it's not just the Indiana game and the Brooklyn game. They play Washington after 2 days off after that. So, like, you have these three easier games. You chill, everybody cuts down their minutes, you find a way to win those three games. Then you got Cleveland, which I think is an important test because the Lakers have struggled against quick guards. And so, especially in that game up in Cleveland, which they were gassed in that game too. But, like, I think that'll be an important game for them to kind of test all of these things against a specific type of matchup that could cause them problems, right? And then you have the OKC game, which is very much a measuring stick type of game. So I think that's what we'll see. I think we'll see them kind of tone it back over the next week, over these next three games. And then I think we'll see them ramp up for that next little brief stretch of games against some good teams. And then if they win those, or at least win enough of those, then they can tone it back again in that tail end of the regular season. I think the one adjustment that we'll see from JJ is, you remember how he talked about how he thought that he chilled too much in practice in the week before the Minnesota series? Mm-hmm. I think what we'll see him do is, if they secure the three seed, they may punt a couple of those games at the very end of the schedule, but then I think he'll practice them really hard in that week before the before that first round series to get him ready.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to be in rhythm going into that series. And especially if you have, you know, you're looking at, I've been targeting the last two games, the second night of a back-to-back against Phoenix, and then the final game of the season against the Jazz. If you can take those games off, but that would also lead to a long stretch, you know, before you get into the first round of the playoffs where you wouldn't really be playing competitive basketball. So JJ would have to make sure that they're in rhythm, they're playing competitive ball in practice, then ready to go. I want to kick it to Jovan to get his take on the stretch here, but I just want to hit everybody with two stats here before I do, for what the Lakers have done. I think two really important things. And number one, it's that during this run, last 10 games, LeBron, Luka, and Austin are a plus 19.2 when on the floor. That's wow. Huge. That is huge for the Lakers here moving forward, that they've got, that was the big question, right? All the talking was LeBron, Luka, and Austin can't work. It does not work. It will never work. Get LeBron off this team. He's ruining everything. It's working. It's working. It's working. It's working. They're figuring things out. It is working in a major way. That is dominant play with the three of them on the floor. And the other thing, I'm optimistic here, because if you look at this stretch of games that they've had recently, they've been on an amazing run. But you go back and you look, and it has been since the Denver game that they have been above average on both sides of the ball at the same time. They have not been above average on both sides of the ball at the same time. They've been winning games over the last week on one side of the floor or the other. Against Houston, the first game, not great in terms of offensive efficiency, very good defensively. Second game, they flipped it. Very good offensively, not so great defensively. Against Miami, amazing offensively. Thank you, Luka. Not so great defensively. Orlando, the defense carried them. The offense didn't. They've been going back and forth. They haven't put together a both sides of the ball game in quite a while. In fact, for the bulk of this win streak, they've had one deficient side or the other. And what excites me is there's the potential here for them to put both sides of the ball together into a game. It feels like they're leaning into one side or the other to carry them through that specific game. And sometimes it's just the variance of an off shooting night or the opponent has a strong shooting night. There's always going to be that up and down there. But it's been a minute since they've actually, despite the fact that they've been winning, that they've played a good game on both sides of the ball at the same time. So this is a nice win streak here for them, but there's a ceiling that they still have yet to hit. And that has got me excited and optimistic for what we've got coming forward. All right, Jovan, your thoughts on this stretch here.
Looking at, I'm isolating it, the 12-1 stretch. I'm going to put last night's game aside just because I want to highlight the positive here of, you know, they win the three games, they lose a close game in Denver, then they go on the 9-game streak. So over that stretch of 12-1, they have the second best record in the NBA behind only OKC, who went 10-0. They have the 9-game streak. They beat Denver, Minnesota, New York, Houston twice, and then Orlando and Miami, two teams that were rolling at that point, two of the hottest teams in the East. And over that span, number 3 offense, number 7 defense, number 5 in net rating. And there was some real progress and development on both sides of the floor, where offensively, I mean, they've been a top 2-3 true shooting effective field goal percentage team for a lot of the season. So it's been like the turnovers that have held them back, but top 3, third true shooting, first in effective field goal percentage, but then 6th in turnover percentage. So that's been a real improvement for them. If you look at the first few months of the season, they were a bottom 10 team in terms of turnover percentage. They have really made strides on that end of the floor and taking care of the ball at a high level. And then also 6th in 3-point percentage, which if you even push that out further, like post All-Star break, they've been shooting the 3 at a very high level, still closer to middle of the pack or below, you know, volume wise. But from a percentage perspective, they have 5 guys who have been shooting above average from 3. And then defensively, 6th in steals per 100 possessions and 11th in blocks per 100 possessions. So the defensive playmaking has also been on the rise as well. So, I mean, this is been the best stretch of the season, of course, but like they had not had anything close to this. I've mentioned it before, but like even looking at that 7-game win streak they had earlier in the season, they beat New Orleans twice, they beat Dallas, they beat Utah twice, they beat the Clippers during the Clippers 6-21 stretch, and then they beat Milwaukee before Milwaukee's season went off the rails. So that was like comparing that stretch to this stretch, it's not even close. So to me, like, this flipped. I think we were all in agreement where a few weeks ago, we're probably looking at this team as like the 5th or 6th best team in the West and a likely first round exit. Maybe they have a puncher's chance to get out of the first round, but then they get shellacked in round 2. Now I think this is completely flipped where they're going to be the 3 seed. I think they will be the favorite in round 1, regardless of who they're playing. With Denver, I think it would be maybe a coin flip series, but I think they'll be favored over Minnesota and Houston. And then I would pick San Antonio over them, but I think they have a better shot against San Antonio with how they've been playing compared to where they were a few weeks ago. So this has been a transformative stretch that I know they lost last night. I know that there's a little bit of doom and gloom right now, but the way that they've been playing and coming together at the right time, and this also coinciding with them getting healthy, them optimizing the starting lineup, them optimizing the rotation. Like, I just think there's a lot to be encouraged by with this group. And I think they're in a really strong position to at least make round 2.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head on all of that. I agree with everything that you said I think they're a much more dangerous team now come the postseason. I would not, again, wouldn't pick them to get past San Antonio, but you finish that three seed, especially if you finish in the three seed and you can draw maybe Houston in round one or something. Houston, Minnesota, Denver, like they all could beat the Lakers. I think the Lakers could beat them. They could prefer to see the Houston matchup in round one, but you draw that, you know, you may be able to make a real run here and really turn this into something to flash some brilliance here moving forward. Let's talk a little bit about this Indiana game coming up tomorrow. The Pacers just got a win over the Orlando Magic. Before that, they had lost 16 straight. The Pacers are in the midst, and they are doing a wonderful job, but they are in the midst of a tank race. Right now, they are tied with Washington in the tank race with 16 wins. In the win column, anyway, they're tied. 16 wins each. How does Indiana respond here? Does Indiana, Pascal Siakam blew up last night on Orlando, does Indiana respond and say, wow, we got a taste of winning, let's do more of that? Or does Indiana say, whoops, we accidentally won a game, we can't afford to do that again, we need to make sure we drop this? I don't know. Jason, what are you expecting to see from the Pacers tomorrow night?
I think they're going to go for it. I watched the second half of that game against Orlando yesterday, and they looked like the Pacers, playing incredibly fast up and down the floor, pressuring the basketball. You've got Aaron Nesmith hitting every damn jump shot that he takes from every spot on the floor. Pascal Siakam making all these plays. Andrew Nembhard organizing the action. Ben Shepherd and TJ McConnell coming in off the bench. They look like the Pacers. And I mean, that was a pretty, pretty bad, embarrassing loss for Orlando. That's a story for another day. But like, as I was watching that, I was like, I don't see any reason why they're not going to do the same thing tomorrow night. And so that's not to say that the Lakers can't win that game, but I think it's going to be a bigger challenge than it appears on the surface. Also, with the way that the tanking system works, the odds are flattened in a way that it's not like it's that big of a difference. And there is a three-game win gap between them and Sacramento, for example. So, like, they're not going to dramatically change their odds by winning a game tomorrow night against the Lakers. I think they're going to go for it. I think it'll be a challenge. The Brooklyn and Washington games after that, those are the games where I'm like, okay, you could sit Luka, you could sit Austin, you could sit one of the big three, and even maybe two of the big three, and win a game like that just because you're a more serious team. But that game tomorrow, I think, is going to be the last challenge. It's the last game of a road trip, which is always a really tricky one as the guys are thinking about finally going home to be with their families. And it's one of those games. So it's different than these previous matchups in that the previous matchups were like, we're bigger and stronger and the perimeter especially than you guys. Whereas this is like a, we're going to run and run and run and run and run. So it's going to be more like the Miami game. And so don't be surprised if they get a little dislodged in the opening quarter. By the way, I found this stat this morning when I was prepping for my show. I thought you guys would get a kick out of this. You know how Miami plays so weird that they kind of catch you off guard?
Yeah.
They have almost a plus 10 net rating in the first quarter because teams are always so caught off guard by them. That drops all the way down to one in the second quarter, and then it's negative in the second half. So, like, every team finally figures out, it's like, oh, we just got to get back and keep the ball in front and we're fine. But it's just crazy how Miami will, like, just do what they did to the Lakers in the first quarter. They kind of did it to the Spurs yesterday as they lingered around for a quarter. But I think it'll look kind of like that tomorrow night. Like, I think Indiana's going to come out running and gunning, and don't be surprised if the Lakers find themselves down, you know, 10, 12, 15 points. But once again, the talent advantage is there as long as they just do their job. And again, you get through that one, you come home, you can sit guys against Brooklyn and get a win. That team's terrible. Then you get two nights off before the Washington game. So all eyes just got to be on the prize for getting that game tomorrow night.
And remember, like, that game in LA that they just played against the Pacers to start the win streak, Indiana was up early in that game. They had several, you know, a couple 4 or 5 point leads, and that was the game where Luka went off with 44 and kind of was, you know, the beginning of this stretch that he just had. And he had, I'm looking at it now, 14 to 25 shooting, 7 for 14 on threes, 9 for 10 at the free throw line, plus 20 in 32 minutes. So yeah, I mean, he was incredible that game, and the Lakers, like, it took the Lakers a little bit to adjust to Indiana. But to your point, I think them being on the road, them still having, I mean, we just talked about 5 games in 8 days. It's going to be now 6 games in 10 days, I guess, like a little bit better, but not by much. Final game of a road trip, like, this to me is the classic trap game of you're looking ahead to getting home, playing Washington, playing Brooklyn, getting a little bit of a break, and you overlook Indiana. So I think Indiana does, especially if they shoot, because looking at this box score, they shot 8 for 35 on threes, 23%. And I do, to at least like my memory, I thought the Lakers' three-point defense wasn't great in that game, and they just missed a slew of open looks. Lakers got to be better on that end of the floor in that specific regard with this Indiana team, because they're playing like with house money. They have nothing to lose. They're just trying to tank their way into next season, but they have the talent. They have the core that made the finals last year, you know, minus Tyrese. So it's like, you just got to be careful with this game. I think the Lakers should win it, but if they are as tired as they've looked recently these last few games and they don't have their legs, it could become a dogfight that, you know, goes into the fourth quarter.
I think the Lakers have largely played very focused basketball during this stretch, and that's credit to them. They're going to have to continue to do it here. This is the traditional trap game, last game of a road trip, especially when you're playing against a team that's missing players. You know, no Tyrese Halliburton. They're a tanking team. Look across the floor and you go, okay, well, we can go 80%, we can go 70%, and we can be fine in this game. And they may be right, but that's also where you can actually put the game in jeopardy. If the Lakers come out focused, prepared, they should be just fine in this one. But if they're not pushing down on the gas pedal far enough and not focused the way they need to be, then Indiana can give them some problems, particularly with the way the Pacers can get out and run. So they're going to have to be locked in to win this game, not quite to the degree as they would lock in against, say, Denver or something like that. But they can't just show up and expect to be handed a win. That is the recipe for disaster in the NBA, especially on the final game of a road trip. So Lakers definitely need to get this one. For the Pacers side of it, yeah, I mean, yes, the lottery odds are the same for the bottom three teams, but their pick's top four protected. So if they have the number one seed, let's call it, in the tank race, they have the worst record in the NBA. The benefit is, well, if three teams jump up, you still keep your pick because you just slide down to fourth in that scenario. Whereas if you're the second, third seed, then three teams jump up. All right, now you're losing your pick. So I think there is some incentive for Indy to tank, even though, yes, the percentage odds are the same, whether you're one, two, or three. But nonetheless, the Lakers shouldn't be reliant on Indy tanking either. They should be able to get out there and beat them. It's going to be a matter of focus. It's going to be a matter of playing intentional basketball all the way throughout this game and do what they need to do. There's the potential here for this to be a guys get some rest in the fourth quarter type game if the Lakers are really locked in. But again, Indy, as they showed, they just beat Orlando, who's a much better team than Indy is. They can get things going. They can give you problems. Pascal Siakam can score the basketball. They're going to play hard, and it'll be on the Lakers to make sure they go out there and get the job done. All right, we do need to get into the chat questions. We'll get there in just a moment. First, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is OG. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
All right, quick shout out to today's sponsor, OG. If you're locked into everything happening in college basketball right now, breaking down matchups, late game decisions, and how far teams can really go, OG is built for you. OG is a prediction market experience where instead of traditional sports books, you trade real world outcomes. On OG, you're trading simple yes or no outcome contracts. For example, you could trade outcomes like, will this team win tonight? Or will this team advance to the next round? Prices move in real time based on market demand, which reflects how confident people are in that outcome. OG prediction markets are derivatives products offered by Crypto.com Derivatives North America, a commodity futures trading commission regulated exchange. Available to eligible users, some state restrictions apply. Right now, with March Madness going on, OG is running a bonus where you can earn up to $150 in extra bonuses just by trading your predictions. You get rewarded whether your predictions win or lose. You just need to hit the trading volume goal. You can earn $20 per round across multiple rounds, plus additional additional streak bonuses if you stay consistent. The goal is simple. Trade at least $50 worth of contracts per round to unlock each bonus. So if you're already following the tournament and making predictions, this is a way to actually engage with it in real time. OG isn't just sports either. You can trade markets across politics, economics, and more. Check leaderboards and jump into live chat with other users. If you want to check it out, head to OG.com or scan the QR code on the screen. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. Thank you again to OG for sponsoring the show. Great read there, Jovan. I know everybody enjoyed that. All right. Let's get into some of the chat questions and comments here. We'll start here. So, man, I really want to believe in this team, but it's hard when we don't have depth. If Luka doesn't score 30, we are screwed. Jason, how big of a problem is the Lakers' depth?
So again, I think that they're deeper than they were last year in the sense that I think that JJ only had five guys really that he trusted. And that was shown in that third game against Minnesota. I don't think there's, with how valuable Luke's shooting has been, with the ability that Jackson has had at times to even look a little better than Ayton at some specific things, whether it's the vertical spacing window or running around in transition, there's a Rui Hachimura as like a different kind of small ball look. I just don't think there's a universe where the JJ finds himself in the same predicament he was in last year. Bottom line is Luka is in much better shape than he was last year against Minnesota as well. Did you guys see that 1 year apart photo that was going around? The difference between the two.
That's why Luka stands get upset when we use like the last year Luka photos on, you know, whatever images or whatever we're using, because it's so different from this year's Luka.
It did happen, guys. Let's not pretend like it did happen. But like, it's one of those things where I actually think in the playoff schedule, like that was one of the things that was really revealing to me about this recent run. Like the physical resilience the Lakers had in a really brutal schedule. The playoff schedule is just not that hard. Even when you get to the conference finals and you're actually playing every other night, the travel schedule is way easier and you get to acclimate yourself to an area. So like, honestly, like to answer the question, I think Luka's going to score 30 in just about every playoff game. So that's not really something that I'm concerned with. I think that overreacting to last night would be a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Don't think you over, and I didn't think they played all that poorly. There are certainly things that, you know, we got into in terms of what caused them to lose that game, but I'm optimistic about this team moving forward here. This comment said, I'm not judging on this loss, but do y'all think LeBron being the second option is more consistent with than AR being the second? And did we get enough of a sample size of LeBron as the second? I don't know. Jovan, I feel like we're taking the LeBron as the second option thing too literally in the general conversation. Like we are taking this whole like pecking order thing to a degree to where we believe that LeBron is always going to take a back seat. I think it's more situational and matchup dependent. And it's more about getting the ball in the hands of Austin to get him going, being intentional about that rather than, okay, LeBron, you're not allowed to shoot right now because it's Austin's turn to shoot on this possession.
Yeah, I think this is fluid and it's more of a matchup based thing. I've made this point before on here, but I think it's like Luka's clearly the number one option. And then I think who's the number two between LeBron and Austin should be more matchup based. So I mentioned like if it's OKC or San Antonio, I think the entry point into that defense is more through LeBron in the post bully ball and leveraging his strength and power and force against their front courts. If it's maybe a Minnesota, like Austin's played really well against Minnesota and LeBron doesn't necessarily have the same physical advantage over Julius Randle. Or if it's Denver, same thing. He doesn't necessarily have the same physical advantage over an Aaron Gordon, where the entry point might be Austin targeting Jamal Murray. So I think it's a great problem to have in terms of you can shape shift and one night it's more Austin as the second side creator or even sometimes the primary ball handler creating out of the pick and roll. And some nights it's going to be LeBron more as a screener roller, getting out in transition, post-ups, etc. Like I think you don't need to have this predetermined, like this is the number two, this is the number three. I know JJ had the comment about LeBron being third in usage and that being what's best for the group. I agree with that in like general, but there have been matchups where Austin has struggled or LeBron has just had a real advantage over an opposing front court. And I think in those instances, you have to leverage your advantage. So I think it really is a case by case, matchup by matchup situation here, where there are going to be some nights where one has a better matchup than the other, and you just lean into that. But I think LeBron is also like, we didn't really talk about LeBron, but he is someone who's looked a little tired here lately. Like last couple games, shot 40% or worse, was 4-for-10 versus Detroit, 5-for-13 versus Orlando. So he's someone who I also think could use a little bit of a break coming up. But I don't think you have to predetermine it. I think based on like round one, if we play it out, I think if it's Houston, it's probably more of a LeBron matchup. If it's Minnesota or Denver, I think it's more of an Austin matchup. And then second and third round, it's probably more LeBron, where, you know, San Antonio and OKC, I think he has more of an advantage against their fours than Austin has against their backcourt defenders. So I think it really just depends on the matchup and the context of everything. But LeBron has thrived when he's been called upon to be the number two. Austin has also thrived in matchups recently, and I think he's been playing better overall despite like the start of the road trip. So yeah, I think it's really case by case.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that ultimately the goal is for the team to be at their best, right? What is the best path for the team to score the ball the most efficiently and to get stops the most efficiently, right? And that's, how are you going to structure things for that? And that's going to change night in, night out as they go through this whole process here. So it's about threading that needle for JJ Redick each night and figuring out what's the way to get the best net from the three of them combined. And obviously it's been working very well.
I think there's an investment with Austin too. Like I think Austin's mm-hmm. just right now, just a way better on ball player than LeBron, at least from the perimeter. I think obviously LeBron in the post, certain matchups, there's value there, but like Austin once again, last night couldn't hit the ocean from the beach to start the game, but he built his rhythm and eventually got hot. And then again, down the stretch, he was our best offensive player. So the tricky thing with the touches with Austin is like, you almost have to keep feeding him because he's going to eventually figure it out.
Yeah. Yep. And that can be frustrating for fans as they're watching early. If he's struggling, if he's missing shots, Luka's the opposite, right? Where Luka comes out and Luka just crushes the first quarter. I forget what his numbers are in first quarters, but he's awesome in first quarters. Austin, it seems like he kind of plays.
Last night he was 17 on 5-for-11 shooting. So another dominant first quarter performance.
All right, let's go here. An NBA enjoyer said, boys, LeBron talks about the damn International Space Station feed that Sakakis only summons for him on Mind the Game. By the way, best NBA pod, 1,000%. Well, thank you. We appreciate the compliment. But yeah, where that the eagle eye camera, I don't, that seems to come out when LeBron is involved and nobody else. I don't know. They're calling up Tony Stark and figuring something out with that.
At least it benefited him this last time.
Right? All right, let's go here. Lakers get free throws for some of those fouls, and you guys are talking about a 10-game win streak. I'm pro going forward with AI referees tech at some point.
It's been a rough couple of games in terms of the officiating. I think just in general, it's really hard to officiate super physical games. The Orlando game was worse. That was a travesty, but I think that last night's game kind of more mimicked some of the OKC games that you've seen over the years, where like Detroit just comes out and commits 150 fouls. And it's like, how many of them are you going to call? You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's
the funny thing is that the Lakers won the free throw shooting battle the last couple of games in terms of attempts, but it did feel like they kind of got screwed in both games. And there were several calls that, I mean, the Lakers were really upset after the Orlando game, and JJ went off and it was talking about, felt like Wendell Carter was targeting Austin, and you had the Goga stuff, and Marcus gets injured on a couple of possessions. And they were really upset with the way that game was officiated and not really reined in. And, you know, despite that, I mean, they had, I think, 60 free throws over the last couple of games. So like they've still been getting to the line a lot, but it has felt like even with that, they've still been getting clobbered, and the physicality has not necessarily been reflected in the free throw distribution.
Well, I think this is actually a big part of why this recent stretch carries extra value for the Lakers. Like, guys, this is literally how the playoffs are going to go. if you're playing against the Lakers, especially if you're Houston or Minnesota, but I'd even argue in the second half against Denver, we saw this with like Cam Johnson and Spencer Jones. Like, the coaches are going to sit down in the locker room. They're going to be like, okay, here's what we need to do to beat the Lakers. Foul the shit out of their guards over and over and over and over and over again. Like, physical bumping, ball pressure. Like ultimately, what we saw in this recent run is a preview of what teams are going to try to do to the Lakers. And so that's why it was so encouraging, is like, they were getting punked physically in a lot of ways. Not punked, punk's the wrong word. They were getting punched in the mouth physically in a lot of ways. And the refs weren't really giving them much help on that front. And yet they weathered through it, fought through it, and damn near won 10 games in a row. It's really impressive.
I think it's important to remember too, like, because I've seen a lot of opposing fans running around last night saying, well, but the Lakers won the free throw battle. You got, why are you complaining when you got more free throws than the other team did? An evenly number of free throws per team does not indicate a properly officiated game. Those two things are not related, right? That's not the way that works. You have to call fouls that do happen, and Detroit fouls more than anybody else. And that's fine. They're okay with that. That's Detroit's strategy. Foul the hell out of everybody all the time, and the referees will not call them all, and they're going to wind up with an advantage, even if they are going to get whistled for a bunch of fouls. They literally commit more fouls than any team in the NBA. So they did that to the Lakers last night, and Detroit got the officiating crew that they needed. Detroit needs, if they get a crew that's calling it tight and is willing to make those calls, they're in trouble. If Detroit gets a crew that is going to let things go, great. They're going to get away with all the stuff. They're going to get a big advantage. And that's what they got in last night's game. That said, Jason, to your point, that's exactly what you're going to see in the playoffs. And that's why this is a good preparation for that, because there's going to be calls missed. There's going to be calls right in front of the official where there's a clear foul and they don't call it. And the Lakers have to be experienced enough to play through that and find ways to win anyway. So that's going to be, it's a good preview for what they're going to experience there in the playoffs, even if it is frustrating, certainly for fans, frustrating for me too. In the moment, I was not thrilled with what we saw out of the officials in last night's game, but the Lakers are going to have to find their way through that.
Yeah. And we all know that it gets even worse in the postseason with what the refs let people get away with. So,
yep.
Especially against OKC.
Yep.
How are we feeling about Jake? Jake LaRavia drew the start, to the dismay of some Lakers fans. People want to see either Vando or Kennard or someone like that. Where are we at on Jake LaRavia, who ironically shot well last night percentage-wise, but actually didn't do a whole lot in terms of his rebounding numbers?
I'm with Jovan. I don't think we're going to see much of him in the playoffs. I think he'll get a shift here or there, especially depending on the type of matchup. If a team actually successfully hunts Luke, I could see Jake kind of taking his spot in the rotation. But like, even on that play where he fouled Danis Jenkins late, I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, he just won't be in the game in this spot in any sort of serious environment. So like, the Jake experience has been frustrating, but at the same time, like, I kind of hold out hope that next year he'll shoot the ball better. So like, you know, here's the thing with Jake. Ideally, if you're a one-way player, you're on a veteran minimum. He makes a lot of money for a guy who can't do much on offense. That can get kind of frustrating. We'll see if he can flip that script this offseason by fixing his jump shot. But overall, like, he's a guy that, like Jovan said, he's our 8.5-9 rotation player guy that may or may not even see the floor in a pivotal game 5 of a playoff series.
So I would, on Jake, I would contend that if you're going to pay somebody $6 million, which is what he's getting this year and next year, you at least want to gamble that there is two-way playability for him. And that's, I think, the gamble for Jake, who's still just 24 years old. If that shot does come around, you've got, at least stylistically, maybe not in terms of quality, but stylistically, the type of player that they've been lacking for a while, a guy who gives you effort and energy on defense, goes after the boards, does some things there on the defensive side. And then, ideally, over the course of his career, he shot the three better, but it's been, you know, on low volume. So hopefully if the shot does come around, you're at least taking a chance on a guy who can conceptually play on both sides of the ball. You just haven't seen it quite enough this season so far.
Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers right now for the season, and like, from a per 36 per 100 possession standpoint, it's about what he's been for his career. So I think the Lakers were betting on some more growth, particularly on the offensive end. But there was a question with his shooting of last year. He attempted 2.2 threes per game, an incredibly low volume, and shot 42% on it. So there's this open-ended question of if he scales that up to closer to 4 or 5 attempts per game, what is that going to look like? And he's only scaled it up to 3.1 attempts per game, so it's still relatively low, but he's shooting 32% on threes. I think that's been the big thing. Mm-hmm. And he shot the ball better earlier in the season. If you look at his splits, then you just hit a point where he has not been shooting the ball. I mean, he's basically been Vando out there in terms of like his shooting. And I think he does do these things well in terms of he makes smart reads, makes the extra pass. He cuts, he screens hard. He can switch across multiple positions. He dives on the ground for loose balls. Like he does the dirty work in a way that I think this group needs, especially if you look at, let's just say hypothetically, he is like the ninth man. You look at the other top 8 guys in the rotation. That's not a strength of that overall group, right? It's Marcus, it's Jackson. And then I think we'll see it from the big three in like the playoffs. And they've been doing it well lately, but like they have not always done it consistently all season. DA, Rui, that's not like how those guys consistently play. So I think they need Jake's archetype to a degree of big, tough physical forward. He is very handsy, and that's why he's always in foul trouble, is because he's trying to play like OKC in Detroit and just doesn't get away with it. But yeah, I mean, he has been, I would say he's lived up to my expectations defensively or you know, thereabouts. I think it's been the offensive end where he's been a clear disappointment. And if you're going to be paying him $6 million, like next year, he has to be better on that end. Otherwise, I don't think he's lived up to his potential.
100%. All right, let's go here. Big fan of the show. Keep up the content. If Bron plays next year, thoughts on Jairus Walker as a backup / successor? Now, with that, I would assume that would be in place of Rui. Jason, how do you handle that situation? Bron comes back next year. How do you handle the rotation from there?
Man, that's interesting. I think I'd rather have Rui than Jairus just simply for the continuity, but obviously so much of it comes down to the contract number. I'm going to be 100% honest with you guys. I've only watched like 7 or 8 Pacers games all season just because of how bad they've been. So I'm not really the best guy to ask how Jairus Walker's development has progressed this year. He had some moments yesterday in the Orlando game. But like, again, like I said, I don't really feel comfortable making profound statements about him on the small volume I've watched of him this year.
The one thing I'll add here is that he has a player a team option for $8.5 million next year, and I don't see why Indiana would decline that. So agreed. You'd have to be talking about trading for him at that point. But I mean, one thing in general is I think it is, especially if they keep LeBron, unless they are not adding anybody else of significance, I think it is going to be difficult to keep LeBron and keep Rui and add somebody, like, unless you're just running it back with the same group and it's like, okay, we're going to split our cap space, LeBron, Rui, Marcus, maybe we earmark our room exception for Luke. All right, we're running it back with the same group. That's one path, but I think that's a lower ceiling path. I think the ideal path here, if you are keeping LeBron, would be, okay, we're keeping LeBron as our starting four, but we're finding a way to upgrade the 3 spot and upgrade the 5 spot. And you're going to have to do that with your cap space, either in free agency or via trade. But that will likely cost you Rui, because you only have $50 to $55 million in cap space. If LeBron's making $15-20 million, that's $30-35 million left. You're not adding 2 starters and keeping Rui. That's just impossible to do. So I've had a lot of like mock rotations sent to me in super chats over the last like couple weeks. And I would say most of them are overly optimistic in terms of keeping Rui, Marcus, and Luke. I think they're going to lose one of Rui or Luke, unless they just don't add anybody, which I think it would be a real disappointment. Yeah. If they just ran this back with the same group. But assuming they add 1 to 2 starting level players, it's going to cost you Rui or Luke almost certainly. And that's just the unfortunate reality of the situation.
Yeah, the math doesn't math in that, unless you get LeBron to like take a room exception or something crazy that I just don't see happening. It's going to be tough. It's going to be very difficult to keep all of those guys that you would like to keep, and help if Marcus Smart would pick up his player option. But frankly, I don't think he's going to do that at this point. He's played too well, and be able to add significant pieces to this team. That's certainly going to be difficult. Gotten a lot of this. Why didn't JJ sub Vando to defend Jenkins? Why didn't JJ make that offense defense? You know, he was making offense defense subs, but he was doing it with Laravia and Kennard, and we didn't see him go all out defensively and go with Jared Vanderbilt. Jason, should he have? I know hindsight is 20/20, but should he have subbed in Vando to put on Dennis Jenkins?
To me, this is like when you discuss whether or not you should foul up three. You're kind of playing the results in a lot of cases. Like, let's say, for instance, you put Vando in and you get a stop, and then Vando gets fouled and he misses two free throws. then all of a sudden, the offense defense sub doesn't look very smart, does it? So, like, I see it. I understand the point of view. Austin forced Dennis Jenkins into like a very difficult fadeaway jump shot, and he made it. Tip of the cap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, so if I'm not mistaken, the Lakers had one timeout left. So
yes.
Austin gets the bucket, Pistons call timeout, 29.7 seconds left. And I think the Lakers thinking was because there was a 6 second difference between the shot clock and the game clock, that Detroit might try to go for it quickly, and then the Lakers would, I mean, then you're in a position where you like, with how this played out, Detroit scored quickly. The Lakers then, they could have called timeout if they wanted to, ran the clock down, but I think because they were tired, they were on the road, they wanted to try to respond, give themselves a chance to, if we miss, like, play the foul game and have a chance to make it up on another possession, which is how this played out, where Luka, you know, comes down the floor, targets Kevin Huerter, gets a pretty good look against him that Luka makes all the time, misses the shot, Pistons get the rebound, they foul them, then the Lakers call timeout for the final play. It ends up getting botched and they lose the game. But I think JJ wanted to save the timeout for that sequence, because the alternative would have been, okay, let's, maybe you get the stop with Vando out there. I'm not saying that that's, but like, let's just say hypothetically that Dennis still scores there with the jumper. Now you're in a position where you either have Vando out there offensively or you have to call the timeout. But then if you call the timeout, you're not trying to run the clock down to the final shot. You are still trying to score quickly. So if you score quickly, but then they come back and score, now you don't have the timeout and you have maybe like a few seconds left to try to get the ball up the court. So I'm not saying that was the right approach. I'm just saying, like, the way it played out, it seemed like they wanted to save that timeout for the final like 10 seconds rather than the final 25 seconds. But of course it ended up not working out. So we can, you know, Monday morning quarterback it and say, hey, they screwed up. But I think that the thinking was like, we're probably getting two possessions here, so let's try to score quickly and then save the final timeout for the final possession.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. But I thought JJ's decisions were defensible. You can argue they should have gone the other way, right? I mean, it's a decision for a reason, a choice to make. And knowing that they missed and it didn't work out, you could say, well, he should have gone the other way. But in the moment, the choices that he made, I thought were defensible decisions in terms of where you were in the clock and with using that timeout or not using that timeout after that Detroit possession. And again, I thought Austin contested really well. The only question is, would Vando in that situation have been, you know, a slightly longer arm? Would that have made a difference? And Jenkins was shooting lights out all game. Maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't, and we'll never know. But JJ deciding to go with Vando on the bench in that situation, it wasn't like it was some, you know, complete meltdown by JJ. He just completely missed the opportunity or something like that. There was method to the madness. There was a reason why he went that route. It just didn't work out the way they wanted it.
I also
to.
Think I don't think he trusts Vando. I also think that's a part of this,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's part of it.
If
too.
We're just being honest,
I thought
about
JJ
it,
like, actually did make some mistakes at the end of the Orlando game. It bothered me that they didn't have their best lineup in until about 3 minutes left. Like, there are mistakes that JJ's made during this streak. I think he's mostly been great, and I didn't really have a problem with what happened at the end of the game last night.
Ever since fans have pointed it out to me, I have noticed some of the time, like, he'll let the team or the opposing team really go on a run and then call the timeout, and it's like,
yep,
you know, it starts to be like an 8-2 run. And then instead of the quick timeout to like, guys, let's regroup, refocus, he lets it extend to like a 16-4 run, and then he calls the timeout. So I think that's like one minor thing I've noticed lately that I think he could be a little bit better with. Is this is a group that still, for all the progress they've made and as great as they've been playing lately, they will just have these moments in games where they brain fart for 4 or 5 minutes and just like let go of the rope entirely. And they need to be recalibrated, regrouped, brought back in and say like, all right, guys, snap out of this. Like, let's focus here. And I think JJ sometimes like hopes they're going to do it themselves, but they often don't. And then they eventually need that timeout and then they snap back into it. So I think he could be a little bit better with that as well.
It's the Phil Jackson. I want them to save themselves. They shouldn't rely on me to save them, that type of stuff. But JJ's not Phil Jackson. That's the thing. And that's obviously a very high bar.
We're a lot of those teams were multi-time champion teams. So
exactly. he's got a lot of high IQ guys on the floor too. I think it's true. Matter of trust in a lot of ways. And yeah. That can come back to be a benefit for you when you have more timeouts at the end of the game.
And true. You know what? There have been a number of times too where I've been saying mid-game, like, I think JJ needs a timeout here. And then the Lakers will go and score and right the ship. So there are times where it does work out, but there's also times where, yeah, he'll let it go to the point where, okay, we lost a 10-point lead. Now I'll take the timeout rather than, we see a lot of teams, right? Denver does this a ton, right? Where you'll go on a quick 5-0 run, boom, timeout. Reset things, they go on a quick 5-0 run back, and then they're right back in the game. JJ will let that 5-0 run turn into a 10-0 run. You lose the lead and then take the timeout. And that's just the way he goes about it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but there are times where it does work out in his favor. All right, guys. I think that's a good place to wrap up. I know we got a couple of super chat questions we didn't get to, but we'll get to those in the near future here. I know we're coming back again on Friday this week, so we'll be back for that one. We'll see where the Lakers stand at that point.
We're Thursday this week, actually.
Oh, are we? Oh, that's right. That's right. We are Thursday this week. Okay.
Thursday at 11 a.m.
Thursday, 11 a.m. We'll see everybody for that. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button here on the YouTube channel. We appreciate all of you, as well as over on the audio formats, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Guys, hopefully when we talk again, the Lakers have another win under their belt.
Yeah, it was good to see you guys. Hopefully the Pacers give us enough to talk about. If not, we'll just get to a bunch of mailbag questions and stuff. Thursday should be fun.
I think they're going to win the next three games, and then they got that stretch coming up of Cleveland, OKC, Dallas, OKC, and you know, three of those four games are going to be real tests for them, because I think OKC will still be jockeying with San Antonio at that point. Mm-hmm. And that might be like the game where if OKC wins, they lock up the one seed and San Antonio can't catch them. So a couple big games coming up, but in the meantime, don't play with your food, take care of it, and win these next three games.
Get it done. All right, everybody, thank you. Till next time, see you and stay safe.